coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation. It's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. I want to welcome each and every one of you. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in me, in my guests, in this platform. Really appreciate everything that you do. We could not survive without your support. That much I'm going to tell you right now, and I want to thank you all for supporting this broadcast and supporting this platform. Thank you. Again, thank you. Busy news day, busy news weekend. You know, Friday, I had a special two-minute news update about the situation involving Melly Weaver. And, I wanted to get the information out there, the fact that she was picked up on a burglary and, or a, on an indictment, at least on the, robbery burglary charge. And I know there are two different distinctions there, but nonetheless, I did that. And then, of course, you know, finding more information out over the course of, over the course of the weekend, you know, it's difficult to keep up with people who are posting information, people who think they know that they really don't know. And it's just difficult to, kind of keep up with them and to, because I was getting emails all weekend. Did you see this? Did you see that? Did you see this report? Can you believe that report? And, you know, Millie's been on our show. Millie was on the show last month, and, you know, she has an immense following, a tremendous following. And she just worked with a couple of other individuals in putting together this video documentary, Shadowgate, which came out. Coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, at the same time that of her arrest. Now, Peter Chowka, he's done, I think, pretty much extensively. He's done the most extensive and fair and balanced investigative reporting on this matter. He wrote an article that appeared, I think, midnight. Or early this morning, midnight, last night or this morning. And he quoted me in that article. And I had spoken to Peter about this. The title of the article at American Thinker is Milly Weaver faces her first court hearing this morning, which would have been this morning, of course, Monday, after being arrested and jailed last Friday. And folks, you can read it. I'll put the link in the program description box. You can read it, but, she had a hearing this morning. It's actually two hearings, one on the indictments and the other on her status of her children. Now, my commentary, if you want to scroll down there, Eric, just at the tad, I appreciate that. Let's see. Keep going down. Oh, I'm sorry. Where's this Weaver's mother? Yeah, Milly Weaver's mother weighs in. Now, there was, when I did the video, there was a comment in the YouTube section. I'm not sure that's going to show on the screen. Reportedly from Millie's mother, saying, "Hey, this was a private." In fact, you don't even have to pull the rest of that article up. This stemmed from a domestic situation that happened earlier in the year. And look, folks, things happen. Family matters happen. You know, and it's embarrassing, right? I mean, if you have a little dust up in a family, that's an embarrassing situation. You don't want everyone to really know about it. And I mean, look, we all have family problems, right? Or family, things go sideways with family sometimes. I get that. But her being high profile, people were saying, "Oh my gosh, she was arrested because of the movie, the documentary." Well, you know, as I quoted to, or as I talked to Peter and gave my quote for his article in American Thinker, there's a couple of things going on here, just very briefly, and then I'll bring John Moore on. A couple of things going on here I want everyone to be aware of. Now, this varies by state. It's different from state to state. But, for example, if you've got, if let's say you and your mother-in-law or mother or husband, wife, get in kind of an argument, and someone calls the police, and the police come, and they take a report. And in this case, let's say there was some video or audio that was taken to say, see how nasty you are, and see, whatever. Okay, it doesn't matter, whatever. Well, when that happens, you know, the police take the report. In many cases, they'll take the information from the phone or the phone itself, or regardless. Okay, as evidence. Okay, there it is there, and thank you, Eric. There is the comment that is allegedly, reportedly from Millie's mother. And let's just take it at face value. Let's just say it is, and it seems to be that report or that posting had information at the time it was posted that was not publicly accessible. So I would suspect that that's the real deal, that she is, in fact, who she says she is. But we always have to reserve a little bit of skepticism just to be on the safe side. So at any rate, she writes that, you know, it was my cell phone worth about $50 that she took during a family dispute that happened months ago when I was in Ohio visiting my family. She took it because I had a phone on record, because I had my phone on record, on record during an argument we were having. We resolved it. We resolved the issue immediately. And I dropped all charges. I mean, you know, you don't want to, you know, sticky family stuff. Everything's fine. And no harm was done. It was a big misunderstanding. All families have their disagreements. And man, don't they ever. Especially during a quarantine. I am shocked my family was arrested after I told the police to drop all charges months ago. And she writes that she had a general affidavit of non-prosecution notarized, which would have been Friday. And I spoke with the police chief, who told me I could not do anything until Monday. That's today. And my daughter, son, and her boyfriend have to stay in jail over the weekend. And she writes, I'm extremely upset. This is not what I wanted to have. I would not want it to happen. I think that they have a lot bigger fish to fry. Makes me think this might have been done to prevent her from coming out with some political information she's covering. There's no reason for this. Now, I tend to agree with her mother. Again, let's stipulate for the sake of this discussion that it's her mother. I tend to agree with that. Because, again, all families have disagreements. So, I pulled up over the weekend, I pulled up the incarceration records of Millie and the two other individuals. And then, of course, the indictments. I don't know if you have the indictments there. You can just flash them up there. I have the indictments that were issued. And this stems back, going back to the incident of that happened on April 25th. And there they are right there. All right. Now, it's interesting that you've got the indictments. And again, I'm not going to air this. I'm not going to put this out there because this particular matter stems from this family issue. All right. And the family issue, the family situation happened on April 25th of 2020. Now, let me digress just for a moment here. Many of you will recall that, back in 2013, I had an issue with, my father-in-law who was being cared for by a woman, and this woman had, really done him bad, in my view, had done him really wrong. So I had called her out on it, and she didn't like that. And she was stealing from my father-in-law. And, I mean, it was just a horrible, horrible, horrible situation. I mean, you cannot imagine how bad that is. Okay. So I know what Millie and her family is going through. I mean, that was a family disagreement there. Okay. But in my case, okay, somewhat of the same thing. And at the same time, you're a little bit higher profile than the average bear out there. So right away, people will jump on this and misrepresent the facts. Some well-meaning individuals will misrepresent the facts. Others have an agenda. Well, with respect to my father-in-law, the reason I mention that is because I was doing an investigation. I'm a licensed investigator. I was doing an investigation, and it just so happened that I was following the caretaker and making no secret about following her to see where she was taking, at that time, a load of my father-in-law's belongings. Well, she called the police, 911, as she was driving and as I was following her, and there was a felony stop because she said that I was threatening her and I was armed, I had a gun, and on and on and on, which was totally untrue. So there was a felony stop, and it was a righteous felony. And believe me, I have no trouble with that, given the fact, given the information that the police knew. I'm giving you a lot of pain. I'm going through some painful memories there, okay? And felony stops are not pleasant things to go through, if you understand what I'm saying. All right. So I'm experienced in this kind of thing. But the whole thing was misrepresented for a while out in the media. Everything was misrepresented. I would read about me and not even recognize what I was reading. Why? Because there were some very well-meaning people who were making it about something it wasn't. All right. But you know what? There were a couple of oddities there, but I'm not going to, not enough to really talk about. All right. But with respect to Miss Weaver, you know what I find very interesting is the fact that she's very high profile, saying this video is coming out, and it's going to be coming out, and she's working with a couple of people. And just as it's being released or is about to be released, the arrests were conducted. Now, does that mean that this was a, quote, deep state plot to put Millie Weaver in jail? No. This wasn't exploited. This was an event that to me appears at the outside to be exploited by politics. It didn't have to go this way. The arrest didn't have to go this way. It didn't have to happen when it did. It didn't have to happen in the way it did. It certainly didn't have to jeopardize her children who were picked up by Child Protective Services. So was this a deep state plot to take out Millie Weaver? No, I think it was an exploitation of events. Just to make sense, hopefully that makes sense to you. Just to put this in on a more reasonable level, okay? Does that, Eric the Tech? Did I make sense on that, or weren't you listening? How are you, by the way?
Yes, doing good.
All right. Yeah, I just want people to understand that. Look, we all have situations in our family. I don't think I've seen one family that hasn't. Things happen. Sometimes things you don't mean. Sometimes things happen you don't mean to have happen. And sometimes the police and especially prosecutors, and you can read my quote in American Thinker, they don't care. Depending on what and there's a lot we don't know yet. There's a lot we don't know. The indictments are pretty plain Jane indictments about just the pinpointing of the facts. But my take is on this is certainly the timing is convenient, if unusual, if not convenient. And perhaps someone higher than the district attorney said, you know, or the prosecutor said, hey, you know, this would be a good time right about now to push the button. So is that a deep state plot? You know what? Maybe. Or maybe an act by deep state, members of the deep state. But does it originate from a legitimate event? Yes. Does it matter that the family wanted it to go away? In some jurisdictions, the police are required by law to file charges. But when you look at the April 25th date and considering this is August, I got a little issue with that, especially when you throw it in front of a grand jury, which absolves in a sense, it's kind of like a Pontius Pilate decision with respect to the prosecutor. So I that's what I wanted to say. And I say that because my heart goes out to Millie. My heart goes out to her family. My heart goes out to, her children. And, I think people just need to understand that things happen. Life happens. No one's perfect. And it's happened to me. And not to that. I mean, not jailed or anything like that, but, just that one misunderstanding I spoke of earlier. So I want to get that out there. And I hope I did make sense, and I hope I didn't drag it out too long. But again, I just, you know, I've got so much compassion for her in that situation, her mom, and everyone involved. It's just a sad thing, but it happens. It's over, and let's just keep her in our prayers, and hopefully things will go back to normal. All right, today marks the opening day of the Democratic National Convention. And of course, we're waiting for three days of just bliss, aren't we? Of course, there's this big brouhaha over the mail-in ballots. You know, when you have mail-in ballots or elections exclusively by mail, it is a terrible idea. It is rife with fraud potential. And there was a report done last April, speaking of April, I'm not sure who did this. I think it was the Heritage Foundation. I'm not sure. But as to why voting by mail is a bad idea. And that seems to be an issue right now. And there's a couple of announcements pending this week and some uncertainty this week. Meanwhile, over the weekend, riots, property damage, physical beatings taking place. I've got some, I think I might have a couple of quick videos to show, but let's bring John Moore on. John, the Liberty Man. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's his website. And he has a very successful radio show. Monday through Friday, you can hear it by way of his website or RBN. If you go to thelibertyman.com, you can click on the link to John Moore's program and listen every day. It's kind of a necessity for me to listen. I like to listen. He's got great guests every week. And there it is right there, the web presence for Mr. John Moore. He's a military veteran, homicide investigator. His credentials are pretty vast. John, how are you, sir?
I'm wonderful, Doug. Good to be here. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. And I wanted to get that Millie Weaver situation addressed and taken care of because you heard about that, right? I mean, did you?
Oh, yeah, of course. I'm glad you filled in details because it didn't make any sense when I first heard about it that we had a local deputy or police officer that they thought was making an arrest based on a federal grand jury, which, of course, was not the case.
Right.
So now it makes perfect sense. And hopefully by the end of the business day today, it will be resolved and it will just be a footnote in history and everybody will get back to what they need to be doing.
There you go. That's right. So, yeah, and I don't like it when family heirs are not. I don't like it when other people attempt to expose other families' personal issues. I just don't like that. I think that's bad form. And And you know what? We don't need to do that. But all right. So we've got a lot of stuff going on out there. We've got, by the way, Klein Smith was arrested in the FBI, one of the first Durham arrests, if you will, for lying, for perjury.
Well, he pled guilty is what happened.
Yes.
There's a lot of hope that what happened with him will be the beginning of many more indictments and many more guilty pleas.
That's
exactly what needs to happen.
All right. I've noticed you've got a couple of things on your website. We'll talk about them whenever you're ready. One has to do with something you mentioned last week, an announcement tomorrow. I'm just curious about that. I kind of touched on it by way of the mail-in votes, which I'd like to hear more about and hear what you have to say. But rather than me lead this off, why don't you take us wherever you want to go at the moment?
Well, we'll go ahead and address that notice on my website. You and I, Doug, we're both broadcast journalists, and we report. And if we think we have valid information, valid evidence, we report as a news item, which I did. I had private information that tomorrow there will be an announcement of no presidential election this year, which may happen, may not happen. We'll know by the end of the day tomorrow. And if it happens, it does. If it doesn't, well, that's that. So there's lots of speculation about what will happen in November. I'm not the only person reporting on this. Many are. Will the election take place? Will it be fraudulent? Will it be skewed? It will only take maybe five or six swing states to be changed through fraud and deception and illegal voting to change the outcome of the election. It doesn't take all 50 states being fraudulently handled. So we need to keep that in mind. A lot of speculation, Doug, about a false flag operation possibly taking place between now and November. And I agree. It's certainly a possibility. My Monday guest, Sam Andrews, who's a world-class firearms instructor and rifle builder, his belief, and I have to agree with him, is that given the nature of this communist insurgency, we easily could have communist infiltrators, communist insurgents, wearing a MAGA hat, shooting at the Antifa Black Lives Matter people. And, of course, hiding identity now is in daylight, of course, with a mask covering the mouth and nose and sunglasses. Facial identification is probably not going to work. So they could do it with impunity. It'd make their escape, and it would be blamed on MAGA, Trump supporters, shooting at the Antifa Black Lives Matter people. Our mutual friend Mike Adams has been making some very bold statements about his beliefs, what's coming up, and I think people would be well advised to read what Mike is saying and get up to speed on true nature of the threats facing our republic, the things they need to be doing to make sure their family is safe in these trying times, which are going to get far worse. Even my neighborhood, Doug, the manager of the local supermarket, a friend of mine, we have lunch together, occasionally have a cup of coffee. He says, John, for years, I place an order of my warehouse about 850 items at once a week. And up until about 3 months ago, I always got my 850 items. Now I'm getting about 450 items, just about half of his normal order. And I said to him, you know, that's just the beginning. He says, yeah, I know. It's just the beginning. We're seeing a breakdown of the whole system that gets food to our tables, Doug. That's already happening. Massive, it's not a secret, massive meat processing plants being shut down allegedly because of COVID-19. Other issues, we're going to see truck drivers refusing to go to places like Portland, Chicago, Seattle, because of their company owners don't want to lose drivers and lose equipment and lose their cargo. Most of the time would not be covered by insurance, by the way. There's some insurance companies that would cover a loss due to civil disorder, and many won't. And, of course, the business owners are well aware of that. Their risk managers make them aware of it, and their attorneys make them aware of it, that they're risking everything to send drivers and trucks into these areas that are cutting down on police protection.
John, to what you just said there, if I may, Dan Bongino retweeted this, and I'd like to, it's 19 seconds, I think, or 18 seconds, but I'd like to play this because what you're talking about, truckers don't, you know, not going to different cities, different locations, different, transport or, hubs that send out, the food and other necessities. What the mainstream media is not reporting, they're reporting on Portland, maybe, you know, there's a peaceful protest. These aren't peaceful. They're not protesters. They're rioters. They're anarchists. They're attempting to take down a republic. You have multiple cities, not just Portland, not just Seattle. You've got Chicago. You've got, Georgia, just cities in Georgia. But take a look at this from New York City, because the media is not showing you this. Now, folks, I'm going to count to five to get the little ones out of the room. Okay. Because there's some language in this, and I didn't cut out the language. For the radio, I'm sure we will, but, for this broadcast, no. And, understand, this is what's happening in cities, big cities, democratically controlled cities in America. Go ahead and play this.
Hey, the fuck back now! Hey, the fuck back now! What the fuck did I just say? What the fuck back, bro? What the fuck back?
Well, now you want to be upset.
Immediately!
People sitting here, you dumb fucks! Not even sitting
here. Yo, I won't dead ass smash your car, bro. Ask me if I give a fuck. Ask me if I give a fuck. Get the fuck out! Right fucking now, you don't give a fuck about Black Lives.
Let's go, shit!
Hey, the fuck!
All right. The reason I played that, John, is because that's in downtown Manhattan near Times Square. And that was taken, I believe, by a retired police chief. It was retweeted by Dan Bongino. But in the middle of the road, they put up a blockade and they're not letting people through. And they're threatening physical violence and property damage. And this is happening with cars, with pedestrians, with trucks. And as you say, this is affecting our ability to travel. And there it is right there. Rob O'Donnell appears to have tweeted that initially. New York City Times Square last night, and that was, would have been August 12th when this happened, threatening bodily injury and property damage. So you can see this happening all across the countries, blue countries, the Democratic owned cities, not countries. So you're right. That's one reason. I mean, would you want to drive a truck and have that happen to you? We saw what happened with Reginald Denny. So,
well, Reginald was national news, of course, and I doubt the man ever regained whatever mental acuity he had before he was almost beaten to death. I think they used bricks or concrete blocks against his skull, is my recollection. The Rodney King riots, of course, Los Angeles. That was near Times Square last night. Is that accurate?
That would have occurred on August 12th, so some 5 days ago, and but nonetheless, it's taking place all across democratically controlled cities all across America.
Well, the protesters aren't terribly bright. Standing in front of 2 tons of steel with a couple hundred horsepower and making threats is not the wisest thing. It really isn't. and of course, New York City is mostly disarmed, but you're also hoping that the driver slash passenger is not well armed, which could be the case in New York City as well as any place else. So these people are not terribly bright to make those kind of threats. The vehicle itself easily could become a weapon to, people use to defend themselves. And they were verbal threats. They didn't get to the point where they were using any weapons, or I didn't see any threats of weapons. I would have to watch it again. But there was certainly the implication of threat of violence, wasn't there, sir?
Oh, yes. Yeah, indeed. And, you know, there was Randy Taylor had, in fact, Andy No, NGO, his Twitter had showed a man being beaten unconscious. I mean, to the point of being beaten unconscious by a group of Antifa thugs wearing, you know, security, apparently security for Antifa. And I think it was either in Portland or Seattle. And it was, it's, it was brutal to see this man lying there. Perhaps life-threatening head injuries.
Oh, no, perhaps about it. If you hit a man hard enough to make him unconscious, you're clearly trying to kill him.
Yeah.
And a deadly force response would have been certainly called for and justified in all 50 states by statute.
Well, yeah. But see, no, here's the thing, John. At this point, at this moment in time, no one's fighting back. And I give that probably 45 days. And I can see bodies being stacked up from that point.
Because they're picking places, you know, if you were to do that in many venues, there would be an immediate armed response. They're picking places where that's far less likely, Portland, Seattle, downtown New York City. The odds of having a pistol by your intended victim stuck in your face is far less in those venues than they would be out where I live, where almost all the men are armed and many of the women. So that they're picking places that reduce their chance of having an armed response to what they do. Now, you and I have talked about this for a while, Doug. What the Antifa, Black Lives Matter, want, they want the armed pushback. They want the violence. And what they're doing in Portland and Seattle and other places, if you throw a rock the size of a baseball at a man's head, you're trying to kill him. Frozen water bottle at a man's head, you're trying to kill him. A green laser shining at your eyes is something that will cause what's called great bodily harm, which falls under the statute of being able to use a deadly response. The police are using great restraint, quite frankly. If I was a police officer, I think I would ask to be transferred someplace else or resign rather than put myself at risk to great bodily injury or death by not being allowed to respond with a deadly force. That's wrong on the face of it. And it's being done for political reasons to have the officers not respond with deadly force when deadly force is being used against them. Once again, the mainstream media, once this thing goes hot, they'll make it look like the peaceful protesters throwing rocks the size of baseballs, frozen water bottles, green lasers are just emotional people that are peacefully protesting, which is far from the truth. These men and women are trying to kill people on the face of it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. They're using deadly force against the police officers. Many of the Antifa, Black Lives Matter anarchists are wearing what appears to be press credentials to help them to achieve their goal of getting close enough to the officers to harm them. So if I was in charge of the officers in Portland or Seattle or New York, I would say you go ahead and arrest everybody and figure out later who's a legitimate press representative and who's not. Just arrest everybody with press credentials. I don't see any alternative, Doug. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, you're right, because they're right now just about everyone who's out there has got some sort of press markings or whatever on their clothing. They're hiding behind the press label. So yes, I agree with that. But here's, you know, I was going through news articles and news reports, and a statement by the head of the Oregon State Police said, we pulled, meaning the state police pulled their Oregon state troopers out of Portland for one reason. And that reason was the lack of desire to prosecute the individuals that they arrest. Now think about that, John. And I mean, folks, you think about that. You've got and I said this before, the district attorneys or whatever equivalent, circuit attorneys, whatever you have in your jurisdiction, on par with a district attorney, the prosecutor, refusing to prosecute the individuals who are attacking the police. And these are all in blue cities or democratically controlled cities. And then they're saying, but this is Trump's America. And that's what's getting the play on the media. This is Trump's America. But wait a second. It's not Donald Trump's venue or his jurisdiction or his job. So that's what we're seeing.
Well, Doug, I've seen this in my hometown also. The prosecuting attorney, Kim Gardner, it's an elected position, by the way. She has not been prosecuting men and women arrested in these riots in St. Louis. The organization representing the police officers has been very public about this. There is a lot of disgust within the ranks of the St. Louis City Police Department for her refusal to prosecute men and women who have been arrested with good evidence to move forward with the prosecution. The Oregon State Police did the right thing by withdrawing. What's the point of being there if you arrest people and they're not going to be prosecuted? What is the point? I don't see any point. So they did the right thing, and they went very public with it, and I'm glad they did. Now, the governor of Oregon probably has some authority over the Oregon State Police to send them back in there. I don't know what their chain of command is out there, but in most of the 50 states, it's an executive branch department with the governor ultimately having decision-making powers. But so far, the governor of Oregon has chosen not to send these guys back in there, which is probably wise, because you really don't want to have several thousand really angry Oregon State Police, especially since usually the governor's security detail is made up of the state police in most of the 50 states. That would not be wise.
Precisely. And this being Portland, and this being Oregon, there's no desire to prosecute the criminals. Now, it's interesting, of course, that there's prosecution against the victims. Very quickly, John, this is 28 seconds. This is what I was referencing. This is on the Gateway Pundit, but it's actually a Twitter feed from, you'll see it on the screen, or you can go to Gateway Pundit and take a look. But this is a guy who drove his truck, allegedly drove his truck, and was accosted by Antifa thugs, one of which, the individual most, shall we say, the most violent, has been identified, and he's very well known, and he's one of these people who they haven't prosecuted despite having the evidence. Take a look at this 28-second clip or thereabouts. This is graphic, folks. I'm warning you, it's graphic.
Racist,
bro.
You fucking loser!
Hey,
fucking try to run people over!
The noise you heard was his head hitting the pavement.
Get him out of the street! Get him out of the fucking street!
That nigga's head, dog!
It's pretty graphic, and there are other videos that accompany that. John, did you see that?
Of course I saw it. And anybody who, in this modern age with communications we've got, anybody of normal intelligence with access to normal communications would know not to go anywhere near these outbreaks of communist insurrection without taking proper precautions, while having a very good reason to go there with a number of friends who are well-equipped and well-armed to deal with the consequences. Why would you go there in the first place to be a possible victim of these people? This guy was very casually dressed, wearing shorts, a T-shirt, and he had no tactical equipment or gear that I could see. The circumstances of being there, was it he was driving a motor vehicle before all this started? Is that what happened?
Yeah, it's my understanding, just from the Twitter feeds, multiple plural Twitter feeds, is the fact that he was driving down the road, and at some point a group of these Antifa anarchists surrounded his vehicle and attempted to stop him by pounding on his window and stuff. And he had then attempted to flee from them, and as a consequence, and I'm just going by open source stuff, actually got into an accident down the road where you saw that he got out of the truck and said, "Hey, help me. There was an accident. I need to move. I need to get out of here." And at that point is when you saw the attack on him. And as I said, the full attack has been recorded, and it's pretty graphic. Oh, but I don't know why he was there. But you know what? He could have been there for a friggin' stroll. This is America. Damn it. And I don't give a goddamn. I should not have said that. I don't give a damn what his purpose was out there. You know what? If I want to take my daughter, dog, nephew for a walk down the street to get an ice cream cone, I don't give a damn if it's Portland, Seattle. This is friggin' America. And I'll tell you what, look, if that would have been me, there would have been a whole different outcome. But you know what, John, and I apologize, I didn't mean to swear like that, but I am, at some point, you're gonna see shots being fired and people getting stuck. I mean, this guy's, I'm sure if he's still alive, he's got severe brain damage or severe spinal cord damage. That Muppet, that piece of shit that's standing over him, it should be in jail. And you got Wheeler and the governor of Oregon doing nothing. And you got these snowflakes around there doing nothing except, you know, clapping and let's, you know, urging this kind of behavior on. It's about time people in America, men with balls, got out there and that guy right there standing over there, over him, double tap, end of story. That happens a few times, it'd be a whole different ball game.
Absolutely. Well, that's what needs to happen, Doug. And if they try that in my neighborhood, it'd be a double tap real quick. So,
sorry. I get.
And you mentioned earlier before this clip that the victim was being charged. How does that work? I don't know how that works.
Not in this case. I mean, it's been, or not that I know of in this case. I'm sure, you know, it could very well be coming because,
that's why all this happens in these cities. Because they don't want to come to us.
They don't want to come out in,
because they'll be the one on the ground.
Right. Right. That was Eric Tech, of course. And yeah, they try it out here. Like you said, John, try it in your neighborhood. See what happens.
It's going to get worse, Doug. We're at the beginning of something that's going to get far worse. Socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. They're testing the water to see what works, what doesn't work, and how to elicit a violent pushback, a violent response from private citizens. They're already getting that when they go out to some of these residential neighborhoods. They're already getting pushback. So far, there's been the loss of life I'm aware of, but that's coming also. It's going to get worse. They have a short period of time to disrupt the elections. And there will be massive fraud in the election with mail-in ballots and illegal aliens voting. There will probably be disruptions in some swing states like Florida and Michigan and other places that are critical to any candidate winning this election. So once again, let's talk about mitigation. It's very disturbing how many conservatives in this country are not even registered to vote. There's a cutoff date. You can't walk into the clerk's office and register to vote the day before the election. There's a cutoff date, days or weeks, maybe months in some jurisdictions. It varies from place to place before you can no longer register to vote. So we encourage our conservative friends, neighbors, relatives to both register to vote and actually get to the polls, offer rides, offer child care, whatever it takes to get these people to the vote, onto the polls the first Tuesday of November. And if that's not possible, to vote absentee ballot to make sure their vote is counted. Every vote counts. Every vote means a lot. And we can't make any assumptions here, Doug. Can we, Doug? Hello, Doug.
I think Eric, I thought for a second Eric might have muted me on purpose because.
Okay.
Yeah, but no, I apologize. Folks, I apologize for losing my cool, and I apologize for cussing like that. I really do.
Can't find the cough button?
Seriously, it was caught between my sport coat and my... anyway. But you know, no. I see what you're saying. And we can't discount the fraud. We can't discount anything like this. And I do believe they're pulling out all the stops in order to make that happen. But here's my question, John. I mean, you talk about mitigation. I mean, everyone needs to get out and register to vote. I absolutely understand that. What are you and I doing? I mean, today I'm thinking to myself, are we making any difference? Are we making any difference with the people that really matter? Is there a reason? Maybe I should go the paper route. Well, I don't know.
We're not going to change the minds of very many, if any, liberals to not vote for Joe Biden. That's probably a non-starter for the most part. What we can do is encourage people who already think the way we think, believe the things we believe, to encourage them to register to vote and get out the vote, as opposed to making a futile attempt to get people to change their belief system. That's an exercise in futility, Doug, to do that. But once again, I do need to repeat myself, it's shocking, it's disappointing how many conservatives in this country are not even registered to vote. They think it doesn't matter. It does matter. I've personally seen elections change the outcome by less than 20 votes in my county. In one case, about 6 or 7 votes. A woman ran for prosecuting attorney. Her own siblings did not vote for her. That was enough to put her over the top, her siblings and brothers and sisters-in-laws. They did not vote for her. They thought they were too busy. And she lost that election. And we ended up with somebody who we most of the county did not want. But that's the way that happened.
Wow.
So, yeah. Every ballot counts. Every vote matters. And we need to overwhelm the fraudulent votes, the illegal votes, with massive numbers. They can do about 8 or 10% of vote fraud before it starts becoming too obvious. So we need to overcome that with our numbers. The demographics long term are not in our favor in terms of being able to influence elections in this country, you know, decades into the future. But for the time being, we still got the numbers, Doug. And we need to do that. We need to do that.
Yeah, we do. And I would urge everyone, as John said, to make sure you're registered, register and vote. But now we've got the issue of mail-in ballots. And that's, again, it's a horrible, horrible, horrible idea fraught with, it's an attack on, it's really trading our security, the integrity of our elections, and the in-person election process for mail-in elections. It's a bad idea for a number of reasons. But now you've got 46 states in some way, shape, or form allow mail-in voting or allow it with an excuse. I think you got 5 states out there that just say, here are the ballots, mail them in. And that includes Oregon, Washington, and a cluster up in the Pacific Northwest. But mail-in ballots, I mean, this could very well be our undoing this election cycle, which is the reason why this is there's such a big fight about this. So any thoughts on that?
Well, in my home state, Missouri, we have mail-in ballots. There's a security protocols that involve the signature of the voter being notarized on the outside of the envelope, which will cut down somewhat on fraud. I don't know how much. I believe Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, is having emergency hearings about the Postal Service, and the Postal Service, of course, is asking for billions of dollars to help make sure the mail-in ballot situation goes okay. But it's the Democrats primarily behind the mail-in ballots with the support of what we call RINOs, Republicans in name only, who unfortunately have gone along with that in many jurisdictions. It's unnecessary. And it's all being blamed on the Chinese flu, COVID-19, coronavirus, as a pretext to have this be a necessity. It doesn't have to be a necessity. But they've been doing for decades, Doug, making it so easy for people to register to vote, where you get your driver's license and license plate. They have that at local libraries, register to vote. Going to high schools to register 18-year-olds. And now, believe it or not, a push to have 16 and 17-year-olds be eligible to vote, which is obviously a massive mistake, isn't it, Doug?
16. Yeah. Look, I think the cutoff to me should be if you're old enough to fight for the country, if the country says, okay, well, here's a gun, you go over to Iraq and you fight on our behalf, then I believe, you know, you're eligible to vote. But I think anything lower than that, no. I'm even in favor, honestly, of people at least passing some level of competency test. And I know that sounds really odd, but,
I'd set it at 25.
Well, at 25 years old?
Yes, I would. 25's the new 21.
But you're, yeah. But again, there you'd be denying the people who are dying for our country or in the name of our country the right to vote. And I don't think that's right. However, so, I mean, if you want to up the age of funding at 25, there you go. But I don't know. That's just my view. But, well, I mean, John, I don't know. It's just, it looks like, it just looks like, based on your website, the information on your website about tomorrow, the announcement tomorrow. Look, I personally, I don't believe that President Trump, he doesn't have the constitutional authority to do that, number one. Second of all.
Everybody mentions that, and it would have to be under some kind of Emergency Powers Act of some sort.
Right.
What that would be.
But by gosh, I mean, can you imagine? Now look, COVID, this coronavirus, Chinese Communist Party virus, it certainly has been an excuse, but if you're allowed to go vote, or if you're allowed to go, shopping, if you're allowed to go get a haircut, you know, if you're allowed to go and, get an ice cream cone, then you should be allowed to vote. Voting shouldn't be a problem. It's just in person, I'm saying.
Well, I agree, Doug. It's a sham. Not shame. It's a sham.
It's a sham. Yeah.
What they're doing. And it's, it's an organized with a chain of command, communist insurgency, top to bottom, left to right. I am sure the National Security Agency, NSA, also called No Such Agency, has all the evidence that they've collected by their surveillance systems to prove that the collusion, the chain of command between the mass media, politicians, Fortune 500 companies, colluding to destroy our country, to do the thing, to accomplish their goals, which is to have President Trump not be reelected, to go back to the way things were, uninterrupted. They liked the way things were, uninterrupted. Mm-hmm. And they will do whatever it takes to accomplish that goal. If it means murder and millions of dollars of property damage, they'll do murder and millions of dollars of property damage. They've already demonstrated that. That's not a debate. So, Doug, once again, we live in perilous times.
Yes, we do.
People do need to recognize how truly perilous these times are and make appropriate, prudent preparations to deal with them. So many different things for different people. But once again, going back to Mike Adams' prognostications, he's very concerned, and I share his concern with the food supply.
Yes, yes. I kind of digressed. I bumped up. I apologize. Yeah, let's get back to that.
Well, the food supply is very. We've got a very sophisticated system of planning, harvesting, transporting, and delivering food to homes all over this country. Very complex, which that level of complexity means it's fairly easy to break, quite frankly. But eating exotic fruits in the middle of winter has become routine in American supermarkets. You could be up in northern Minnesota in the dead of winter and eat tropical fruit fresh. It's been picked fresh.
Right.
That's very strange and very bizarre, but you can do it. And it's taken for granted that you can do that. Fresh meat in pretty much every supermarket in the United States, chicken and beef, of course, occasionally. Some of the fishes will be there.
Yep.
It's a little bit more difficult. But this whole supply chain of food is at risk. The money to buy the food is at risk. The employment for people to get the money to buy the food is at risk. These government checks that have been mailed out, unemployment and so forth, in some cases we got people being paid more not to work than when they were working. That's certainly no incentive to be looking for a job, is it, Doug?
No.
Not at all.
No. And it's amazing to me the how much government money there is out there for people. If this is in direct relation to what you're saying, not to work, to do nothing. I mean, unemployment and other benefit packages. It just amazes me to see this, John.
Well, it's part of the plan.
Yeah.
We have people in these positions, United States congressmen, maybe even some senators, advocating that every citizen of this country get a monthly stipend just to have it. I mean, without doing anything to earn it. That's very dangerous territory. It's socialism on the face of it. And you end up with a large percentage of your population becoming worthless louts is what you end up with. What is publicly stated as a bottom line to help people survive becomes their monthly employment check, as opposed to the publicly stated purpose, which is to give people a cushion to fall back on when they're having trouble making ends meet. Very dangerous territory, and certainly very unconstitutional also, I might add.
Well, I find it interesting as well that if you live in, let's see here, Arizona, Iowa, Louisiana, and New Mexico, FEMA, they're going to be sending out $300 federal enhanced unemployment benefit. Now, this is based on an executive memorandum that President Trump signed on August 8th as negotiations over a stimulus package stalled in Congress. So those individuals in those states who are not working are going to get a $300 bonus for not working. And ostensibly, this all has to do with the effects from the Communist Chinese Party virus. So what does that mean? And you know, is John, I mean, is this a Donald Trump should this be laid at the lap of Donald Trump in terms of blame, or is this part of a larger attempt to work around?
Donald Trump's reputation is being three or four moves ahead of his opposition.
True.
And if doing a $300 check as a one-time deal, which it appears to be a one-time deal, helps him achieve other goals that are far more important and far more valuable, then I say go for it. I don't know what the grand strategy is, and I don't believe you do either, Doug. But
no, I know.
His siblings said growing up, as just children, you learn never to play a board game against Donald Trump because he always won. Always. Yeah. And board games involve some complex mental decisions, planning ahead, understanding the rules of the game, and being able to prevail because you are able to think several moves ahead of all your opposition. And he's been doing it now for his entire adult life. And business is largely responsible for the success this man's had. And the success he's had as president, I think, is part of this as well. He's able to outthink his opposition. And what he does with the mass media has just been phenomenal. He plays the mass media like a cheap violin. And they still don't get it, and they won't get it. They can't resist doing what Donald Trump wants them to do. They don't even realize that they are doing what Donald Trump wants them to do, which is even better, isn't it, Doug?
Yeah, it is. A report just came out where you'd mentioned about the media. I'm looking here. Let's see. Fake news. Media reports 150 times more negative news on President Trump than on Joe Biden. And we haven't even gotten started yet. Think about that. And despite that, his popularity is still there, President Trump's is. But it's not guaranteed. Most assuredly, it's not guaranteed for the next, or 80 days from now, or whenever it is. But man, I've never seen, and that proves his statement. I believe that proves the statement. I've never seen the media, and I'm sure you'd agree with me that, where they have been so anti-presidential, so much against the president of the United States than this media has, and against this president.
In my lifetime, Richard Nixon would be the only one that would come close, and the way he was hammered by the mass media back in the early 70s. I'm not aware of any other president being hammered by the mass media as much as President Trump. Nixon is probably a far second place to compare to what's been going on with President Trump. But I ran for Congress myself in the 1996 cycle, and I got to meet some pretty high-level political operatives. And it's well known within that area of expertise that you want your name in the media as much as you can. There's a lot of value. There's a lot of political value there, a lot of dollar value, and so forth. And President Trump, his name is in the media multiple times, 7 days a week, because of the things he does. I've wondered for the last 3.5 years if he actually writes these tweets himself, or if he has a team of people that do that for him. These tweets are brilliant. They catch the attention of the media. They put his name out there again. If he writes a tweet that's rather controversial, it'd be on the news cycle for 2 to 3 days. That's phenomenal, because these tweets typically are in the news cycle for 15 minutes. But his tweets are written in such a manner that they remain in the news cycle for 2 or 3 days. And once again, circulating his name for his name recognition. And what he's doing there is brilliant, Doug. What do you think?
You know, I think so too. Anytime an individual, especially a president like President Trump, can get and reside in the minds of the media or their enemies, it's a win for me. I mean, I know that I've got people who don't like me, and I know people don't like you. One came to mind the other day. Eric and I were talking about some fake PhD who's got this fixation on homoerotic dreams, I think, about you and I.
He needs a life. I know who you're talking about.
My goodness. But I laugh because, you know, living in his head, rent free. My goodness, you know, I don't have to do a damn thing. So the way that President Trump is doing this, I think it's a brilliant. And you notice how I'm sure this is why you mentioned that the left freaks out. And oh my goodness, every one tweet, and it's just, it could carry for, well, and Covfefe, it's still carrying on, but you know, so it's kind of funny how this works out. I'm okay with that. And this is the first president I think has utilized Twitter. I know Obama really.
He got started with it, but President Trump's taken Twitter to a whole new level of what Hussein Obama ever dreamed of.
Oh yeah,
Hussein was the by the way, the grandson of Muhammad, and Barack was the horse that Muhammad rode to heaven.
Yes,
so we have a former president named after a horse. Isn't that, well? We do. I mean, that's, you can look it up yourself. Yeah.
I just had a flash of Mr. Ed go through my mind. Shows you my age, Mr. Ed. Yeah. But no, it's got some Islamic implications. You mentioned Obama. People say, well, this country's racist. Well, so, if you believe what the media tells you, then Obama was a black American who was a black person voted into the office of president. Now, he's not. He was an Arab, of Arab descent, the majority, based on his genetics. But, okay, let's go with black. Then how in the world are we a racist country if we elected a black president? And, you know, if blacks are a mere, 12.7% of America's population, how does that work out where America's racist if he's elected, was elected and reelected on such a wide margin? Just saying. I don't know why I threw all of that information out there, but there you have it, you know?
Well, it's a good point, Doug, and it holds up to scrutiny that we did elect a black president twice. And, of course, he was not eligible to be president because he's not a natural-born citizen. And the same thing with Kamala Harris. She's not a natural-born citizen.
Right.
And most people don't know the difference between the citizenship and a natural-born citizen. And maybe we need to talk about that a lot because it deserves discussion. We once again have a candidate for vice president who's not a natural-born citizen. She's a dual national.
Yes.
And what does that mean? What does that mean? And what did the Founding Fathers not want? The Founding Fathers did not want a dual national to be president of the United States, or vice president, as the case may be. So to be a natural-born citizen, there's two things. You have to be born on American soil, and both parents have to be American citizens. If those things aren't in place, you could be a citizen. Which, if you're born in this country, anybody, unless they change the law, anybody born in the United States territory, like, for example, John McCain was born on a U.S. military base in Panama, I believe. That's U.S. territory, so he's a natural-born citizen to American parents in being born on American territory in a foreign country. But Barack Hussein Obama His father was a foreign national from Kenya, which at the time, in the late 1950s, was part of the British Commonwealth, which means right now, on the 17th day of August, 2020, Barack Hussein Obama could have a British passport if he wanted one, because he's a dual national.
Yes.
Dual nationals are not eligible to be president of the United States or vice president. Kamala Harris, at the time of her birth, born in this country, which makes her a citizen, no doubt, not at all, it's not a debating point, but her parents were not American citizens. That makes her a dual national, not eligible to be president or vice president. And that's well known. There was a Supreme Court decision in the 19th century that gave very specific definition of what a natural born citizen is and what it's not. And why the president is choosing to ignore this, I don't know. This is his choice for the time being. Maybe he'll choose to bring it up later. Most Americans are not aware of this, are they, Doug?
No, they're not. And you know, it saddens me that we've gone so far astray from the Constitution in this country. It just saddens me.
Ted Cruz, same way. He was born in Canada.
Yeah.
I believe he had American parents. I believe he did. But if he wasn't born in American soil, if you got American parents, you're born in Canada, you're an American citizen. But you're not a natural born citizen.
Correct.
You're a dual national. Ted Cruz could have a Canadian passport if he wanted one. That's his choice, being a dual national.
Right. And by the way, there's such a thing as being, there's a difference between being a citizen of the United States and a natural born citizen. So, and that's what we're talking about. And one has to do with constitutional eligibility for the higher office, and the others for everything else. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I blame the establishment left or establishment right, the establishment Republicans, or and even some conservatives, for not having the will to bring this up. I really blame.
Well, it needs to be brought up, and there is a sizable percentage of Americans who have enough brain cells to rub together to figure out that that's reality, hopefully.
Yep.
And then many others who don't have the mental ability to understand the difference, unfortunately. But that's where we are, where we have a large percentage of Americans, about half the adults in this country, are either illiterate or semi-literate, which means illiterate, obviously, you can't read and write, but semi-literate means you can't read and write at a third grade level or above. Very tragic, but that's where we are, Doug. I've been in meetings with this one woman. She's a very good friend of mine. She's been the campaign chair for three presidential campaigns. She keeps her name private. They always put somebody up front to be the public person. And I was her house guest in Florida a few years ago. She had two of her campaign advisors there while I was present. And very lengthy, detailed conversations. And I'll give you an example of one of the things that goes on at that level. How presidential candidates talk when they're in a public venue and how they talk when they're in private. And frequently, it's two entirely different ways of speech. Speech patterns, vocabulary, inflection, everything is different. When they're talking in public, they are trained to have a vocabulary and a delivery style that will appeal to the masses, as opposed to the way they talk in public to their friends and associates who have an equal level of education, an equal level of life experience, and so forth. And they do that. And I recall the first presidential election that I'm aware of was when it was 1956, Adlai Stevenson versus President Eisenhower. And I remember reading, because I started reading the newspaper as a youngster in about the third grade, I was reading that, quote-unquote, Adlai Stevenson is too intellectual to be president of the United States. And as a boy, I would have been, 9 years old. I thought, how is that possible? How is it possible for a person to be too intellectual to be president of the United States? Well, it turns out that it's a true statement. And despite how high your IQ is, how well your diction and your vocabulary is, if you use a high level of vocabulary, education, diction, delivery style, you're not going to get elected president because people will reject that as not being somebody they want to vote for. So these candidates at that level, they do that. They change their delivery style. They change their vocabulary. They change their diction. They change everything to have a wider appeal to a wider audience, Doug.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the attempt to equate with the common man is there. You know, you recall, of course, the Joe the Plumber, for example.
Right.
You know, and that was that lasted for a while. But yeah, so I understand that. I guess I can see that. What are you thinking about the elections this year? And again, I know with respect to the what's on your website, and folks, you can go to thelibertyman.com. That's the website of John Moore, and you can read his analysis. You can, it's down there. You can read, the alleged, announcement and then John's analysis, you know, with stipulations there. And I think it's well reasoned. The analysis is well reasoned without regard to the topical matter of the source information. So, in other words,
getting back to your question, yeah. Doug, it's a dynamic situation.
We
hear the term a lot, the 900-pound gorilla in the living room. Well, the little toe of the 900-pound gorilla has creeped in the form of the first indictments of high-level people from the Obama administration spying on President Trump's campaign. So that's the beginning of what I hope will grow dramatically of the Attorney General, the Justice, the United States Attorney General's office, filing indictments. And, of course, this first guy, it was a plea bargain, and he pled guilty, so there was no public trial that would reveal everything he did. But hopefully this will just be the beginning. And as the weeks go by, we've only got, let's see, September, October, the first several days of November, and 2 weeks of this month. That's what, 10 weeks? A little more than 10 weeks? To have indictments and guilty pleas come out demonstrating the involvement of Hussein Obama and Joe Biden at the very highest levels, both these men being aware of, being complicit in, and ordering and issuing orders to spy on President Trump, to commit crimes against General Mike Flynn, whose brother I met at a fundraiser in Dallas, and others, other innocent parties who were the targets of illegal activity. Now, we mentioned President Nixon a few moments ago, at least I did. What took place with Watergate was child's play. Granted, there were illegal activity, and President Nixon had a number of men. It's well known what went on there. They burglarized the Democratic National Campaign headquarters in the Watergate Hotel to find dirt. And that did happen. And the real crime, of course, was the cover-up, not the crime itself. That did not involve the FBI. That did not involve the CIA. That did not involve NSA and other high-level executive agencies. That was completely internal in the White House, completely internal, that whole affair. What Obama did is involve the top leaders of the FBI, the CIA, and other executive agencies in criminal activity. I'm pretty sure that's unprecedented in the 200 plus years of our country, Doug, is the complicity at the very top of the president, vice president, head of the FBI, the head of the CIA, and others in committing crimes. There's no presidents that I'm aware of. Are you aware of any, Doug?
No, not at all.
So there we are. We've got about 10 weeks before the election for more indictments to come out, hopefully, to get a trial going, to hope even a trial could even begin and have testimony before 10 weeks is over is, quite frankly, very optimistic. As I know and as you know, Doug, our entire judicial system, whether it's your local city court situation, county, state, federal, it all moves forward in 30-day blocks of time. Well, there's basically two 30-day blocks of time between now and the election. I don't believe there's going to be any trials. There simply isn't enough time. However, there's time for guilty pleas and to take place.
Right.
And sentencing. Guilty pleas and sentencing between now and the first Tuesday in November. what happened last week was very significant. That guy, he knows some stuff, and I don't know what the plea bargain was. Typically, a plea bargain of that nature would include him offering his sworn testimony to reveal what was really going on. And I would expect that, wouldn't you, Doug?
Well, you know what? Yeah, and since you mentioned that, we have at the ready, and I want to thank Eric the Tech, we have Devin Nunes on Fox and Friends talking about Klein Smith, the FBI lawyer pleading guilty. And there's some interesting things that were brought up. You want to take, is it all right if we take a look at this? It's only about,
Please, let's do it.
All right,
let's go.
About 4 minutes. All right, here it is.
It's the first criminal case brought by John Durham's review. Former FBI lawyer Kevin Kleinsmith expected to plead guilty for falsifying a document to justify surveillance on a former Trump campaign advisor.
Here to react, ranking member of the House Intel Committee, GOP Congressman Devin Nunes. Congressman, thanks for being here. You've been ahead of the curve on all of this since the beginning. You took a ton of criticism when it first started. Now that there's this first guilty plea in the Durham probe, put us under the hood. Should we expect more?
Well, we sure hope so. I want to make sure everyone knows that this was one of the main attorneys that was involved in all the different aspects of what happened during this Russian hoax that was perpetrated on the American people and on the Republican Party and the president himself and his team. It's important to remember that this is the attorney that I always called the French-speaking attorney. He was the one that said, "Vive la resistance," when he was asked, "Is he going to quit?" He was also very concerned about whether or not that his name was on a lot of these documents. So he clearly knew that he had a problem right after the election. I think that Durham is letting him off extremely easy. There was multiple indictments that could have been brought, probably including conspiracy and including destruction of evidence. So my guess is maybe he's going to cooperate, maybe he's not, but this is a good first step.
What do you anticipate, Congressman, coming next? Will there be more revelations of deceit? What's your guess?
Well, if you listen to what Attorney General Barr said the other night on his interview with Mark Levin, I guess it was last Sunday, about a week ago, I thought he said something along the lines that there's a lot of conspiracies here that have to be tracked down. And that's what people have to remember. This was such, the corruption here was so wide and broad-based. It stretches not just from the FBI and the Department of Justice. It also stretches back to the Democratic National Committee, the Clinton campaign, many operatives, foreign spies. Everybody talks about, the mainstream media continues to talk about Russia, Russia, Russia. Well, they're also implicated in this fiasco also. They were involved. They were receiving the dossier. There's also a very popular left-wing think tank in Washington, D.C. called the Brookings Institute. They're knee-deep in this. The Department of Defense was funneling money over to a group in Cambridge that was actually spying on the Trump campaign. So there's a lot of moving parts here. I hope that at least before the election, we get a full report of everything that I just laid out so that we know at least exactly what happened. And from there, a lot of people need to be brought to justice for this, but the main thing is we need the truth.
Shifting topics for one moment, Congressman, I want to ask you about a proposed law in your home state, a wealth tax in California. It'd be the first of its kind in the United States. Under this proposal.
So there it is. Your thoughts, my friend.
Well, I've been around some of those types of situations where the attorney representing the defendant negotiates with the government's attorneys. Each side wants something. The attorney representing his defendant wants his client to not go to jail. The prosecutor, they want to move forward with their investigation. So in a plea at this level, and we're not talking about stealing a car. This is very high-level stuff. At this level, the defense attorney will reach an agreement to have his client give testimony, possibly provide documents with in great detail to the prosecutor's team so that they can acquire more evidence to go after more high-level people and then, of course, issue indictments against those people. Mm-hmm. So I have no doubt, I have no reason to believe that's not the case here. All the evidence shows that this will be a routine matter in terms of following the evidence provided by this man who pled guilty. He knows where some bodies are buried. There's no doubt that he does. He was a high-level operative with access to meetings, access to documents that very few human beings had access to. So his testimony, his cooperation is very important. I would say, given the gravity of the situation, his life is probably in jeopardy. Without a doubt, in my opinion, it is. To get him to shut up, what's he saying, dead men tell no tales.
Yeah.
Men have been murdered for far less than what this man brings to the table in terms of evidence, far less. And I don't know the man personally. I don't wish him harm. I would like to see him live up to whatever plea bargain that he reached with the U.S. government and provide the evidence necessary for the Attorney General's people to move forward and get to the truth and do it post-haste. If it doesn't happen before the election, the importance of it is reduced dramatically. Obviously, from a historical perspective, it means a lot to get the facts laid out. But for as far as this election of 2020 is concerned, it needs to move forward as soon as possible to get these results in front of the American people before the first Tuesday in November this year. That is an absolute necessary.
I totally agree with you on that. My question is, now if additional indictments, or this was obviously a guilty plea, but from perhaps that exchange of information that he provided, maybe in this determining a sentencing or impacting the sentencing matrix on the crime, do you think the people of America would look at this as, especially now getting buttressed against the election, this close to the election, would the American people breathe a sigh of relief or say, wait a minute, this is all politics? And President Trump
is playing. Mixed bag, Doug. It'll be a mixed bag to answer your question.
All right.
As I mentioned, I learned a lot when I ran for U.S. Congress. I had a mailing list that went on for 10 years. Everybody wanted to be my friend. The Jewish businessmen wanted to be my friend. The Nazis wanted to be my friend. The American Indians wanted to be my friend. Everybody wanted to be my friend because I was running for Congress. But the
what happened after you didn't make Congress? Did you
I was still on the mailing list. The mailings went on for 10 years. It was amazing. Once you're on those mailing lists, they simply don't end. But Doug, one of the things I learned is many facets to these elections. Whoever influences the most illiterate people is the one who will get elected. That's how bad it's become. And I'll repeat myself slowly. Whoever influences the most illiterate voters is the man or woman who will be elected president of the United States.
Scary.
It's scary, but that's reality. That's my reality, based on the evidence that I'm aware of. When you see the campaigns, what goes out over the TV and radio, it's 30-second clips and 60-second clips. People are making decisions for something very important based on 30-second sound bites and 60-second sound bites in the form of, at least in the presidential level, very highly sophisticated audio and video presentations. The money, the time that goes into these things is phenomenal. Hollywood level productions for 60 seconds, for 30 seconds to influence what people think, what people believe, and of course, how they vote.
It also has made its way into programs like The Simpsons and other, now those are adult cartoons, but also other programs, the television shows, television programs. I've seen such a, well, to give you an example, misrepresentation of the sentiment here in America in a number of areas, including, for example, the radical leftist gay lesbian LGBTQR whatever alliance there. There's an overwhelming inundation of programming in these shows in television. for a mere 3-4% of the American population.
Right. Well, what they're attempting to do is normalize mental illness.
Well, the same thing. I mean, I use that as an example for what you're saying, too, to influence the intellect, the lower intellect. And this is not a slam, deliberate slam, but they tend to watch more television and believe more what they see on TV, including the local news. So is that who you're kind of referencing in terms of?
Well, obviously.
Okay. All right.
Most adults in this country don't read books. According to the American Library Association, 3% of the adults in this country have a library card. Half of those use their library card for light entertainment reading. No problem with that. Which leaves 1.5% of the adults in this country who both have a library card and use it for anything serious above and beyond light entertainment reading. That's pretty dismal, to say the least.
Yeah.
Men and women under age 50, I used to say under age 40, but now we're a few years later, men and women who went to public schools under age 50, for the most part, there's some notable exceptions, weren't taught phonics, which means for them, reading is not fun. Reading is not something they do for pleasure because they can't. If you've only been taught sight reading,
right,
the Dick and Jane readers, for example, and no phonics, reading for you will not be fun, will not be something you do for pleasure because you can't. My son-in-law, great guy, great family man, great husband, great breadwinner, he says, John, if I want to read, I have to close the door and be in a room being by myself, have complete silence, and then I'll read. But it's not fun. I'll do it because I have no choice, doing something for his employment, of course. And yes, he can read under those circumstances, only when he has no other choice, because it's a requirement to help his career, help his profession to advance. Otherwise, the man doesn't read anything of any consequence. And that's true of most Americans who went to public school under age 50, Doug. It's not that they don't want to read. They can't read. It's not fun. It's not enjoyable. It's something they don't do for pleasure. And that's where we are, Doug. Being unable to read is crippling. It makes you subject to the whims and fancies of people who put out whatever they put out on television and radio as your only source of information. And that's an unfortunate reality. And when I was together with the presidential campaign chairperson and her advisors, that was brought up a couple of times about how do you appeal to people who are illiterate / semi-literate, which is about half the adults in this country. Obviously, way more than enough to influence the outcome of any and all elections, to determine the outcome of any and all elections, Doug.
Mm. Very well stated. John Moore is my guest. Not really a guest, part of the program. His website, thelibertyman.com. There it is on your screen, or will be shortly, thelibertyman.com. Please bookmark that website and listen to his program Monday through Friday. He's got just a wonderful array of guests. And, of course, the news. His entries below that on the same page. Some good stuff there as well, some new things. And, of course, his daily briefings also included on that page. That's thelibertyman.com. John Moore, and I want to thank him for being part of this program because he adds a lot to it. Before I get back to John, I just want to take care of some business. You know, folks, when I tell you about honey, what do you think of? We all shop online. I just want to kind of throw this out there. We all shop online, and we've seen that promo code field taunt us at checkout. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? Of course you are. But thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. Honey is the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. Now, Honey supports over 30,000 stores online. Wow. And they range from sites that have tech and gaming products to popular fashion brands and even food delivery. Now, here's how it works. Imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites. When you check out, the honey button drops down, and all you have to do is click apply coupons. Wait a few seconds as honey searches for coupons that it finds for that site. If honey finds a working coupon, you'll watch the prices drop. And by the way, honey, this last week, my daughter-in-law bought some clothes for Joe Jr. and, managed to save about 18, it was 18 and change. I think it was 1850, 1845 in that range. And it was a great, I mean, you talk about a percentage off of the clothes that she purchased. It was a significant percentage. And I know Eric the Tech, we got a different camera. He saved $36.50. And we ended up, I think the week before last, saving $14.50 on food. So here's what you need to do. By the way, Honey has found it's over 17 million members, over $2 billion in savings. That's a lot of money. So here's what you need to do. This is, now pay attention because this is where it's at. If you don't right now have Honey, you need to get it. You could be straight up missing out on free savings. It's literally free. It stalls in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. Get Honey for free. Join at joinhoney.com/Hagmon. Let me spell that out for you. JOINHONEY. Just like it sounds. joinhoney.com/Hagmon. Remember, two N's on Hagmon. joinhoney.com/Hagmon. All right. I want to thank you for supporting our sponsors. John, getting back to you. So many things going on. And again, I can't believe how quickly this, our time together is going. I mean, we've got about 20 minutes left or thereabouts. So, just talk to me, whatever direction you want to take this, talk more about anything or, change the subject completely. It's up to you.
War. This is a communist insurrection. This is communist insurrection. With complicity, we see Black Lives Matter and Antifa. Of course, they're part of it. The mainstream media is part of it. Fortune 500 CEOs are part of it. High-level politicians are part of it. What kind of cooperation, what kind of command and control there is between them, I don't know. But to happen in the way it's happening, it would be very difficult without command and control at very high levels to coordinate what's taking place, when it's taking place, how it's taking place. And two or more people agreeing to commit a crime is a conspiracy by definition. That's what a conspiracy is. Two or more people agreeing, cooperating to commit a crime. In my belief, based on the evidence I've seen, there are multiple conspiracies taking place to destroy our country, destroy our republic, to harm individuals, harm people. When you disrupt the food supply, you harm people. When you put people out of work, you're harming people. I wouldn't be surprised at all if evidence is revealed, hopefully very soon, involving the complicity of Fauci and Bill Gates, for example, and their cooperative effort to wreck our economy, wreck our culture, wreck our republic, with the complicity of high-level members of Congress, Fortune 500 CEOs, and the mass media. If they're not cooperating, it's certainly quite a coincidence that all these things are coming together at the same time with what appear to be a very dramatic adverse effects on our economy, our culture, our constitution. It couldn't have been better planned out to destroy our country, Doug. And there's persistent evidence that there'll be a second lockdown this fall, possibly just before the election, maybe a few weeks before the election, a lockdown that some people are saying, like Mike Adams, for example, that this lockdown will be it. There's not going to be any lockdown being over. That this will be the last lockdown and the final lockdown and the one that ends up killing people. The vaccine will be ready for distribution probably in 6 or 8 weeks, maybe sooner. Vladimir Putin announced a vaccine last Monday, I believe it was. Moderna is soon to have one available. Anybody who takes that vaccine basically signing their own death warrant, in my opinion, Doug. It will be multiple doses, not just a dose.
Right.
If you could have a vaccine for this COVID, you could have a vaccine for the common cold. In fact, if you take the test for the COVID-19, you'll test positive if you've had a common cold in the recent few days before that. They're very similar diseases in terms of scientific analysis of them. So the vaccine will be ready, and most people will be demanding it. They'll be wanting to get in line first. They'll be paying bribes to get in line first. They won't need to force people to take it. They'll have to decide who gets it first. Maybe they'll have a lottery. They've done that in some of the movies where they have a national lottery. Everybody, barring such and such date, they get it first, and so on and so forth. At some point, it would be coercion and possibly force to get people to take the death shot. But I'm not signing up for it. How about you, Doug?
Not at all. And the death shot, it will be. I can see a time, and I hesitate there because, to me, this is really what we're getting at. I can see a time where you're not going to be able to work, for example, go into your – in fact, I was talking to my most immediate neighbor Saturday, and he said, you know, we're working from home right now. This is a major, major company. We're working from home right now, and we don't expect to go back into the office – office is plural, until we all receive, we all get vaccinated. That's what he told me. I'm
right.
Thinking, you know, yeah. So what happens if you're saying, no, thank you. No, I'll pass. Will you be able to pass? And so you could lose your job. You could lose your ability to travel. Right now we've got travel restrictions in all, but, we got travel restrictions. You go into New England area, you know, Massachusetts, Connecticut, whatever, you have to quarantine for 14 days or you're supposed to, or face fines if you're coming in from the other mainland states. It's crazy. So yeah, I'm not going to take it, to answer your question. I'd never take it. I'm looking for the time when, is this going to be the line people will need to have set and not going to cross? And if they come at you with a, well, they don't even have to come at you with a hypodermic or with a needle. All they have to do is say, okay, you can't go back to work, or you can't send your kids to school, or you're going to be cut off from food stamps, or you're going to be whatever. You're disallowed a credit card or bank card. Do you see that taking place?
I see it. There has to be some law changes for that to happen. At the federal level, all they have control of right now is commercial flights, entrance to federal property, courthouses, military bases. So they are limited what they can do right now at the federal level. At the state level, we've already seen more draconian measures, where the state of New York, for example, is running random checkpoints for people coming in by highway travel. And telling people they have to self-quarantine 14 days if they enter the state of New York, depending on where they come from. So at the state level is where we could certainly see and already are seeing people being arrested and fined for not wearing a face mask in public,
right,
for example. So those measures are already taking place. It's amazing, Doug. In January, we had the highest, the best economy we've ever had in the history of the country, lowest rate of unemployment for all minorities. And we've gone from that in 8 months to where we are. We're not in a depression, probably not far from it, with the businesses that have closed, people out of work, and so forth. And they talk about the V-shaped bounce back. Well, I hope it's a V-shaped bounce back. But the things I'm seeing and hearing and reading tell me that there's going to be another lockdown, probably more severe than the first one. I was telling a friend yesterday, I was out and about, not yesterday, but Saturday, driving around in my Triumph TR6. I never thought I'd be glad to see so many cars on the road. But it was, you know, 2-3 months ago, busy highways were vacant. It was really scary, Doug.
Yeah,
like a science fiction movie.
Yeah, yeah. I still don't like, you know, I'll tell you what. I still don't like to go into stores. Last night, late last night, I was driving by a ice cream stand. I was outside, and up here in the Northeast, that's what we have. I mean, we have little shops and lines of people standing in line to buy ice cream at this counter, and all except three, I counted. I wasn't in line for ice cream. Lord knows I don't need it, but all but three were wearing masks outside. Outside, right. Yeah. And I'm thinking, I'm thinking, wow, how far gone are we to really, I'm seeing this. And by the way, the three people who were not wearing masks were older males, three older males, mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know. I don't know. New Zealand postponed their elections by a month today. I don't know whether you saw that because of the coronavirus fears. I don't know why I mentioned that except we were talking about, you know, postponing elections. And isn't it funny too, not funny, but ironic that the left is using this coronavirus issue as a public safety issue in order to push through mail-in ballots. So.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have to give credit where credit is due, Doug. They're brilliant in their tactics. They're absolutely brilliant in their tactics. They're wrong. They're unconstitutional. They're not based in science. It's based in fear. And people are going along with it. I haven't had TV for 18 or 19 years, but when I visit somebody that does and turn on the news, the first thing on the news broadcast is the number of new infections and the number of fatalities. And that's been going on for, what now, 5 months, 6 months?
Yeah.
It really gets old. And anybody who's paying attention knows that the numbers don't mean a thing. A friend of mine, he has several medical doctor friends who've mailed in sterile test kits, never touched by human hands, coming back positive. How is that possible, Doug? People getting letters in the mail that they tested positive for COVID and never even took the test. The state of Washington, about a month ago, or maybe 6 or 8 weeks, revealed publicly that all gunshot fatalities were listed as COVID deaths. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's many things at my website, at thelibertyman.com, examples of outright fraud, outright deception, to give false impressions. Remember back in March, we're seeing MASH hospitals, these field hospitals being set up at Central Park, Navy hospital ships being brought into New York Harbor, and similar situations around the country. And then a few weeks later, we realize they're empty. There's mm-hmm. nobody there except a few people making sure stuff didn't get stolen. There's nobody there. But what people remember is the initial reports. Oh, we got a hospital ship in New York Harbor. Oh, we got a MASH unit set up in Central Park in New York City and other venues around the country where similar things were done. In my hometown, St. Louis, one of these drive-through tents were set up on a parking lot of a hospital. I went by there the second or third day. Nobody was there. It was just empty. I mean, the people that worked there were there, but there was nobody in their cars to be tested. It simply didn't exist. But the news broadcast made a big splash when they said, oh, we're sending up a mobile testing unit on the parking lot of the hospital, and people can drive through. You have to call and make an appointment first to make sure you got symptoms. You can't be tested unless you have symptoms. Well, nobody was there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the... at the beginning of the lockdown, Doug.
And we have the same thing here. We've got a couple of locations away from hospitals that are empty. I mean, empty all the time. There's no cars, no lines, no nothing. I'm not sure when they're going to be shut down. I believe one was shut down. But aside from that, and the commitment, the dollar amount commitment, I think $1.6 million per bed, non-used bed. I could be wrong on that number, but it's an outrageous number nonetheless, that it just never took place. So regardless of the efficiency or efficacy of this coronavirus, this communist Chinese party virus, in terms of its, effect on our health and well-being, and admittedly, people are dying. There are people who are dying from this, but usually factored with comorbidity issues. But it's just, it's it's not right. This is being used as the excuse for everything, I believe.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. The German government appointed a panel of the top scientists, top doctors to look in the COVID-19. The government did not like the findings of these top scientists and doctors who let the government know that everybody who died was within a year of death from something anyway, because their health was so frail and so fragile that they were within a year of death from something. And the government didn't want to hear that, the German government. In fact, they're having massive protests in the streets now in Europe against the lockdowns, against the draconian measures being taken in Europe because of the Chinese flu. And I say, good for them. We need some of that here, don't we, Doug?
Yeah, we do. Yes, we do. More than anything, though, I think we need people to rise up. Especially now, this is the most historic election, I believe, 80 days thereabouts away. The most historic election, the most important election in American history within the recent time period. We need people, the conservatives, to go out and to vote President Trump back into office. And don't forget, folks, too, people are saying, well, we should have seen perp walks before this. I agree. But don't forget, I think Barr was only in there 18 months so far and Durham 15 months. You'd think that there's, that would warrant enough time. However,
not at this level, Doug.
No, not at this level. You're right. You're right.
No, this is not a routine criminal prosecution. Far from it. And I've been involved in federal criminal matters as well as hundreds of state matters. And at this level of complexity, things simply don't move very fast. They don't. Unfortunately, it's an unfortunate reality. And you and I aren't going to change it, Doug. It's simply the way it is.
No, that's very true. But I think, I think that we have the ability to put Donald Trump in for another 4 years, or at least as long as, I can imagine what's going to happen if he is the definitive clear winner on election day. I can just imagine what the streets are going to be like.
The communist insurrection will be full-blown, unrestrained.
Right.
They know they're done. The ability to win what they want peacefully is over for probably two generations. They know
exactly.
And why hold back at that point? Just go ahead and go for it and have open rebellion, open insurrection with all the violence that goes along with it.
Obama playing into this. Your thoughts on his roles in taking down President Trump, not in the Spygate sense. We know that he had the role there along with Biden. But your thoughts on Obama?
Well, Obama's getting more active in public statements that are harmful to the president, which if there's precedence for this, I'm not aware of it. Typically, once presidents leave office, they don't get involved in national politics, in this manner anyway.
Right.
So this is, if there's precedence for it, I'm not aware of it. But what Obama is doing is very harmful to the president, very harmful to the republic, and very helpful to the communists. And that's what I expect him. I expect nothing less. He was raised as a communist. His advisors were communists, which trained him to do what he's done. He's passed, basically his entire adult life. So he's carrying the water for the communists is what he's doing by making the statements he's making. Very harmful and meant to motivate the other communists and help Joe Biden win the election. That's exactly what he's doing.
Man, it's going to be interesting several weeks up to the run-up to the election. It's going to be interesting several weeks after the election. For sure.
Think about this, Doug. We got about 8 shows before the election, give or take.
Yeah, you and I do. That's it. That's scary.
8 shows.
Where did the
Here
time
the
go?
Yeah.
It's a mystery.
That'll fly by.
Yeah, well. I'm not looking forward to winter, brother. I'm not. Yeah, it's gonna fly indeed.
Well, I'm optimistic. I have a 1-week training situation set up, being set up in October, a Caribbean cruise in February, an Alaskan cruise in June, and a week at a resort in Maine. Dates to be determined on all these things as far as that goes. So I'm optimistic about our future on one hand. On the other, I'm prepared to deal with outright communist insurrection. So I hope for the best, but I prepare for the worst, Doug.
Well, okay, John, explain to me. How can you do both things at the same time? How can you prepare for something like you just described, yet go ahead and make plans as if everything is normal? And I'm asking this not tongue-in-cheek, but I'm asking this kind of – that's a softball question to you. How can you do that, you know?
Well, I guess when I was a young man, I got to Vietnam 2 weeks after my 20th birthday. I found out pretty quick that I could buy a brand new British sports car with no import duty. That was one of the few perks we got. So I immediately began making plans to do exactly that, while at the same time making plans to deal with the Tet Offensive that I knew was coming because I read the CIA reports that I picked up on a daily basis.
Oh.
So, so I guess you could say, to a certain extent, I've lived my life that way my entire life this past half century. Planning for the and hoping for the best, but having plans in place for the worst. So I told my buddies in Vietnam, I said, when your parents send that disgusting fruitcake to you, you keep that fruitcake. Don't throw it away because you might just need it. It turned out we did, of course. So it's not unusual for me, Doug, to live my life that way.
Right.
I've been making preparations. Basically, going back to when my daughter was born, I bought my first case of freeze-dried food back then. That was, 45, 46 years ago. It's not unusual for me to be living my life that way, to hope for the best and plan for the worst.
Hmm. You're exactly right. We only have about 5.5 minutes left. We have 8 minutes left. All right. Thank you. So, any final thoughts in the last 8 minutes? We've got 8 weeks of shows, eight shows until the election.
Well, let's go over and summarize some things.
Go ahead.
You need skills. If there's a crisis, you need skills. You need emergency communication skills, ham radio skills, and you need emergency medical treatment and CPR skills. You need to make sure that no matter what happens, that you and your family have all the water they need. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
At least a 2-year supply of food. Very few people have a 2-year supply of food. And a place to live that's some distance from the most likely places where violence is going to take place, which is urban and suburban areas. Small towns are far less likely to have any violence of any consequence. There's been Black Lives Matter show up in residential areas, but they don't do too well, so that they have been going back. Anything's possible, Doug. And always have a plan B and a plan C. Don't necessarily depend on everything that you're doing to work out. That there could be something unexpected come up, and you need a plan B in case your primary safe haven, for whatever reason, is not usable.
Okay, makes perfect sense to me. There was a listener who sent me something here. I'm trying to find it. I thought it was a great way to close out the segment with you and I today. Let me see if I can find it real quick here. Here it is right here. And, let me read it to you here. It's actually a six little stories with lots of meanings. The stories are two sentences long. Number one, once all villagers decided to pray for rain, on the day of prayer, all of the people gathered, but only one boy came with an umbrella. That is faith. Number two, when you throw babies in the air, they laugh because they know that you're going to catch them. That's trust. Number three, every night we go to bed without any assurance of being alive the next morning, but we still set the alarm clock to wake up. That's hope. Four, we plan big things for tomorrow in spite of zero knowledge of the future. That's confidence. Number five, we see the world suffering, but still we get married. We have children. That is love. Six, an old man's shirt was written, On an old man's shirt was written a sentence. I'm not 80 years old. I'm sweet 16 with 64 years of experience. Now that's attitude. And I don't know who did attribute that to. I don't know who wrote it. I don't know what book it came from, if it did. But I thought that was rather a cool way of saying, you know what? We've got to have all of that, from the attitude to the love, to the confidence, to the hope, to faith.
Well, Doug, the most powerful force on this planet is love. Nothing else even comes close. It is the most powerful force on this planet is love. And I think people need to keep that in the front of their brain, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Anything coming up this week, John, that we should be aware of on your website, on your program specifically?
Well, I'm going to have the Millie Weaver documentary on my website, hopefully by the end of the day, no later than tomorrow.
Okay.
And it will be saved on our private server, so if they attempt to do away with it, it's not going to go away. I will have a copy of it at thelibertyman.com either by the end of the day today or sometime tomorrow.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, I've watched it. I know, excuse me, I know Roger Stone was apparently or allegedly a little bit upset for being included in that. And I know that there's some push and pull with that. As anything else, you know what, folks, like anything else, you know, take a look at it and make your own assessments, right? Did you watch it? Did you happen to see it?
I've only seen a couple of clips from it, but it's on my list to watch the entire thing ASAP, probably before my show tomorrow morning.
It's
well done.
Very well done and very interesting. Some things I didn't know, some things obviously I did, but nonetheless interesting. All right, my friend.
It is absolutely.
I wish you the best of evenings, and I wish you the best of days and nights, and I can't wait till we get together next week.
Well, I'll be getting the Triumph out in a few minutes and going for a ride, sir.
You know, no windshield, right?
No windshield. Windshields are for sissies.
Yeah. Eric the Tech, what do you think?
Of that? I'm going to kick mine out when I get in the parking lot.
Brooklands. We have Brooklands windscreens. They're about the size of a loaf of bread to keep the bugs out of your teeth.
Two-seater, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna come down and I want you to take me for a ride. That sounds like a blast.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is a blast, yep.
All right. John, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. Have a good night.
See you next Monday.
All right. TheLibertyMan.com. What a great guy. I mean, I'm telling you what, he's knowledgeable and he's sensible. He's level. You know what I'm talking about, right? And I appreciate him. John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com. What a great guy. All right. Some good advice, by the way. And you go about living your life regardless of what, you know, what it seems out there. Kind of like that story I referenced earlier. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in tonight. Don't forget HagmanStore.com. That's where to go to buy some great gourmet coffee. HagmanStore.com. There you can get Detective's Choice, my favorite. I tweaked it a little bit. It's I tweaked it with the beans a little bit. The beans ratio, ever so slightly. But it makes a really even better cup of gourmet coffee. Hypercaffeinated. That's in whole bean, ground, and K-cups. That's Detective's Choice. As well as Patriot and Revolution blends. Three different kinds of coffee. Three different modes of taking it, whole bean, and if you're really good, you can chew on the whole beans. That's fun to do. Ground and K-cup. HagmanStore.com. HagmanStore.com. Also, two other websites: HagmanReportLive.com. That's for all of the video and audio segments that we do, and HagmanReport.com. There you'll find articles, links to articles, my thoughts, guest contributors, and such. And that's HagmanReport.com. And lastly, I just want to say again, thank you very much. You know what, folks? It does take a lot of money to do this and to have boots on the ground in the work we're doing to expose the agendas and the people, infiltrate in particular the groups that are attempting to take down this country. And one real quick thing. Do you remember what I said about the media, what Randy Taylor and I, what we said about how the media had played And we found connections between the media and the people on the streets with some hops in between. Shadowgate talks about just that at the very beginning. I think in the first 15 seconds or 20 seconds. We found the same thing. We'll be talking about it. God bless you. Good night.